thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. This episode of The Media Twits is brought to you by CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, offering an intensive, cutting-edge, three-semester Master of Arts in Journalism and a unique one-semester advanced certificate in entrepreneurial journalism, and CUNY JCamp, a series of continuing professional development workshops focused on emerging trends and skill sets in the industry. Learn more at journalism.cuny.edu. Joining me is Rafat Ali from New York. How are things going there?
Things are good. Thanks, Mark. It's been a very busy news weekend, news week, and of course the news today about Gaddafi getting killed. So everybody sort of tuned into that.
Yeah, that was kind of. I mean, I guess you knew it was coming, but it's still a surprise and a little bit of a shock when it happens. And then you know you get these gruesome pictures and images being sent around, and it's a little crazy to see that, I guess.
Yeah, and there was a video on CBS News website where Hillary Clinton found out on her BlackBerry, and they were waiting to interview her. And this is the pre-shot before they're sort of setting up the shot, and wow. And her assistant gave her the BlackBerry, and this is live on TV. Not live on TV. I mean, they have it on record, and they've put up that clip that she got the news through her BlackBerry. Anyway, it's just
what was her reaction like when they
she says, oh wow, she said unconfirmed, that's what she kept saying.
Yeah, so, they weren't sure at the beginning
of it, so yeah.
Yeah, I just read through Andy Carvin from NPR. He's you know, who's been covering all the different Arab Spring, you know, things through Twitter. Basically, you know, this was his week off to work on a book about it, and it's like I'm waiting for him to say I picked the wrong week to take off.
Yeah, I'm sure he already said that. Yeah,
I mean, he's not. He's tweeting just as much as any other time. He's still. I don't think he could really turn it off.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you gotta think like somebody needs to follow him and like make sure he's okay after like 2 years, because like, he could probably kill himself doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's one thing we always think about with this stuff is just how much it takes a toll on people who are just connected that much.
Yeah, well, Kara Swisher, our common friend, she had a very minor heart attack, but of course, hopefully, doesn't have to do anything with work, and she's recovering fine. But she does work really, really, really hard.
Yeah, I saw that. I guess they did their first D conference in Asia in Hong Kong, and I guess after the flight. She was kind of stuck in her flight, and she had this kind of mini stroke, and was you know in the hospital, and I guess is missing the conference. But you know, of course, she made a video of it in the hospital room, and she's got her computers around, and her she's still on Twitter. And I mean,
it's still breaking news,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
I mean, it's funny. I've had similar experiences where you know you're caught, something happens with your health, and. People are still there, you know, and it's like there's the downside of being to work all the time, but then there's the upside is that when you build this kind of virtual community, they're really there for
you.
Yeah,
that's true. That is true. Yeah. In Hong Kong, I'm sure, I don't know if she had family there, but for sure, I'm sure there are enough people there to sort of take care of her, hopefully.
Yeah, no question. So here are the stories, you know, for this week that we'll be talking about. The first thing is a report from the Knight Foundation about nonprofit news sites. All these sites like Bay Citizen and Voice of San Diego, and they did a research report for a couple years trying to figure out what their business models were. Can nonprofit news really work? And we're going to have Meyer Patel from the Knight Foundation and Michelle McClellan come on and talk about their research, and we'll dig into that a little bit. And then we've got the iPhone 4S, which just was released and had a phenomenal weekend of sales. However, Apple fell short in its latest quarterly earnings and took a hit from Wall Street. You know, we'll talk about whether that was really necessary or whether Wall Street's being a little bit too harsh on Apple. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about Android's new release called Ice Cream Sandwich, which seems really tasty, but I guess the question is whether, either of us might be tempted into the world of Android or not. So we'll talk about that too. First, let's start with the Knight Report. This study looked at the Bay Citizen, Crosscut, Min Post, New Haven Independent, St. Louis Beacon, Texas Tribune, and Voice of San Diego, which are all these kind of nonprofit watchdog journalism sites that have been launched basically because the newspaper, the local newspapers, have been hurt so much financially because of the loss of classified and everybody, people moving into digital. The news just has changed so much. So a lot of these are online-only publications that are trying to be nonprofits and, gotten a lot of money from, big donors, people with a lot of money, kind of the ProPublica model, but at a local level, where you're getting donations from people and trying to make it as a nonprofit. So this study looked at them and found that while they're building audiences and doing some pretty good reporting, their business models still just depend too much on the big donors and foundations, and that's not going to last. They need to really expand how they're bringing in money. Have you followed any of these sites or read any of them?
I was looking through the report. Very interesting. I think the key thing here is the difference between, I guess, the seven sites that they looked at versus some of the other hyperlocal stuff, sites. This is particularly focused on news, enterprise, investigative-driven local news sites.
Exactly, yeah.
Compared to, like, all entertainment or local info sites that are not necessarily that mission driven. These are more mission driven in terms of trying to do more investigative enterprise journalism, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and it's serving the public good, the greater good of the public, and what kind of the old version of, or I guess part of journalism's mission about serving public good rather than how can we turn this into a big money-making scheme.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part is how they're trying to diversify the revenue streams, and I guess that's what the whole report is about.
Yeah, so let's bring on our guests and see what they have to say. Meyer Patel joined Knight Foundation in 2009 as Vice President of Strategy and Assessment. He's responsible for ongoing strategy development, research, and knowledge management. He was previously a project associate with the Global Economic Governance Program at the University of Oxford, involved in research on international institutions and economic affairs, and was a fellow with the World Trade Organization in Geneva. Michelle McClellan is a journalist, editor, and consultant who works on projects that help foster a healthy local news ecosystem. She founded the Block by Block Community News Summit, a network of small entrepreneurial local news sites. Also advises local online news projects on behalf of Knight Foundation. She also develops training programs for them at the Knight Digital Media Center at USC Annenberg. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you've done this report about nonprofit news sites and how well they're doing as businesses. What were the kind of the biggest takeaways for you guys? What were the biggest surprises? Were the things that you learned that you just didn't know about before, or did it kind of strengthen what you already knew?
I think for us, the report really confirmed that in today's day and age, good journalism isn't enough. You've got to be thinking about how you behave and act like a digital business. And there were three main things that stood out for us. One, although none of the organizations have yet developed a business model, it's becoming apparent that you need a set of three characteristics. One, a strong biz development team and a capacity to execute around revenue experimentation. Two, a really strong focus on understanding your audience and who you're trying to serve. And three, the technical capacity to be nimble and flexible on the web.
Yeah, did you notice, Michelle, that a lot of these organizations kind of sprung up saying, we're started kind of by journalists? And, people thinking, we're going to do all this investigative reporting and all this stuff, and they weren't thinking about it from a business perspective at the beginning?
I think there's been sort of an arc along those lines where at first the focus is primarily on content, And then I think the journalists realized that they, as Mayer said, that they need to do more, not just in terms of business development, but in terms of community engagement and focusing on, you know, what audiences they're trying to serve. So, yeah, I would say there's sort of a continuum. At the same time, I think a couple of the newer sites, like Texas Tribune is a good example, came in, started in 2009, a lot stronger, with a lot more balanced team. So they had strong business development, they had strong tech, as well as good journalism.
I mean, do you think that a lot of times these sites, you know, they like in the instance of a Bay Citizen or ProPublica, you know, they start with a huge chunk of money that's donated to them. Does that kind of take their eye off of the business part of it, just because they have such a huge amount of money to start with?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think what it speaks to is how they treat that big foundation or individual donor gift. And if they treat it as equity that's supposed to help them start up and invest in their ongoing capacity, then they're heading in the right direction. But when they treat it as a recurring revenue stream that's largely going to subsidize the content, you're on a road that's not going to take you very far.
So the question is, so in terms of the diversification of revenues, has there been any interest in funding these ventures beyond the beyond the foundations, and say, let's say, the local venture capital community, and any of that stuff, or any of the sites trying to attract that kind of money?
I think to date we haven't. Michelle, you may have additional insights, but to date we haven't seen venture capitalists invest in these organizations as a venture investment. We've seen, obviously, venture capitalists like John Thornton and others invest in their sites as a grant or an individual gift.
Right, Warren Hellman, who's a VC at Bay Citizen, funded Bay Citizen too.
That's right. And I think the question is, even if in the long run these organizations can break even and can sustain, you know, their ability to produce news in the public interest, I doubt they're ever going to be able to generate the kind of returns that attract a VC firm itself.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of their each of these individual publications working with the other, either competing or complementary publications in the area or nationally, how do you think those experiments are going?
I think that varies from market to market. I mean, you do see some of the nonprofit and other new startups entering into partnerships with other local media. Certainly, several of the sites that we looked at are syndicating content to other publications, and they don't make a lot of money from that overall, but it certainly helps raise their visibility and their credibility, especially when they're getting started.
Mm-hmm. Is there a threat to some of these sites because of the IRS? There's been issues with the IRS not recognizing some of the sites. I don't know if the ones you looked at, but I know some others have had issues because the IRS won't give them that kind of nonprofit status if they cover politics or have some kind of interest in politics. And have you guys looked at that at all or heard about that?
Yes, it's a question and an issue of ongoing concern, and there are a number of organizations that are focused on this at the moment. So the Investigative News Network, INN, is helping spearhead an effort to kind of look at this question. And then at Knight Foundation, we've also partnered with the Council on Foundations to take a look at this very question around taxation. I mean, our view on this is we ought to be trying to create a rules and a system that allows for good journalism to thrive and for allows the continuing production of news in the public interest.
Have any of you seen any sort of innovations in terms of the fundraising efforts from users at a local level, any of these sites that sort of go beyond, let's say, what NPR and the local public radio stations do? Have you seen any innovative efforts on that front?
I think one area is, for a couple of the sites at least, is events. Some have events that are labeled fundraising events, but you have others like the Texas Tribune does a major political conference, and the St. Louis Beacon does a major sort of local festival, and these generate not huge amounts of revenue, but significant revenue. So that's one model, I think, where the nonprofit community engagement mission links to a certain stream of revenue.
What do you guys think about the Texas Tribune and why it's been such a success? That one seems like it's pointed to so many times, and it seems like they've been really good about diversifying their revenue stream so well. Do you think, I mean, you mentioned that part of it is that they had business people and tech people up, early on. Is there anything else about them that you think is why they've been so successful?
Yeah, I think one of the other factors, and this goes back to organizations in the space that are likely to have success, are those that really focus on a need that their audiences are craving. And in this space, the Texas Tribune did a great job of focusing in on statewide politics. So it isolated a very specific niche and has really owned that segment of the market. But all of your other points about the way they invested in their team's capacity and the diverse set of individuals they brought on can't be discounted. That's been a huge factor.
And do these guys have any kind of religious beliefs around advertising that they either, don't want to do it at all or want to do something a little bit more creative? Or are they kind of all over the map when it comes to advertising or sponsorships?
I think when you look at the organizations and ask them to project out a couple of years into the future where they're going to get their revenue from, not all of them think advertising is going to play an important part in that equation. A lot of them think that where they're going to get most of their revenue is from individual member programs. But that said, those that do think advertising is part of the mix are really looking at partnerships where the local merchant or the local organization ties very specifically to the brand and identity of the news platform. They're not going to be able to win out on overall reach and traffic just by itself. That's not the value proposition. The value proposition is really a highly curated target niche audience that aligns with the civic values of these news sites.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on and spending some time talking about the report.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
So let's talk about the iPhone 4S. And it had this incredible first weekend out, supposedly the best first weekend of sales I think that AT&T has ever had, right? Or is it the history of the iPhone itself?
Yeah.
Four million sold, 1 million to AT&T. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna ask you, did you buy it?
No, what happened with me is I'm one of the people who switched to Verizon to get the iPhone 4. And so I'm kind of locked in. I think they do allow me to upgrade. But I don't know. To me, I wasn't sold on everything being good enough for me to really want to have to upgrade it. I'm very curious to check it out. But as far as do I really need, a better camera to be able to do voice commands. The things that are great about it might not necessarily be for me. I think the excitement for some people is just, they might have had an iPhone 3G, they might have had an old one, they might have been on AT&T and wanted to switch. The interesting thing was that Apple, reported their earnings and, did not sell as many iPhones in the last quarter and were kind of blaming the tech blogs and the rumor mills for, saying, hey, there's going to be this iPhone 5 is coming. It's going to be a killer phone. And this is what's happened before, I think, with the iPad, too. Before the next one came out, people don't buy it because they know there's an upgrade coming up.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the disconnect between sort of what happens from a consumer behavior point of view versus what happens at Wall Street and blogs as if like the two don't know that the other exists
right.
At times. think that it, a lot of people who are buying it, this is what analysts are saying, are people who upgraded from a 3GS that they had, and sort of most of the buyers were that. I think people, yes, they were disappointed that iPhone 5 didn't come out, but of course, a lot of people still went ahead and bought it. And a lot of people were eligible, I suppose, and I'm eligible on November 7th, actually. I'm not going to get it until that.
But you will get it when you can get off your contract.
Yeah, my phone is iPhone 4 that I have. It's broken from behind because I dropped it. So I need a new phone anyway, and I'm looking forward to using Siri. My fiance has been using it, and she really likes it. So she got the phone early this week, Monday she got it. So she's been using it and has been liking it a lot. And Siri has been creating a lot of buzz online. I wonder, is that going to be a huge driver for them?
Yeah. Well, I wonder about, you know, why this phone is so popular as it is. I mean, part of me thinks maybe, you know, despite that there was all this stuff happening when, you know, Steve Jobs died. And, you know, it's almost in some bizarre way, kind of like, you know, Elvis Presley dies and everyone goes out and buys his albums, his old albums. Maybe people are like going out and buying, you know, what Steve Jobs' creations now after he dies. I, you know, maybe that's part of it. Maybe part of it is that it's on three networks. It's on Sprint, AT&T, and Verizon. So, you know, now it's covering. And if the T-Mobile buy goes through, I think the cell phone users, everyone except for 18% of cell phone users in the U.S. will have access to an iPhone, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think that's probably, you're right. I think that's probably driving it to a large extent as well. Just the diversity of new people that are coming into the whole thing because of the fact that it's available now on all these other networks. So there's a lot of talk about how Apple has disappointed the street, and do you think people are being overly critical of Apple with this?
It seems like it, just because they've had such a great run over, you know, how many years, how many quarters, that, you know, one time they kind of miss expectations, and a lot of it based on the fact that people were waiting for the next version. I mean, and now we already know that after the quarter ended, they're having this incredible weekend with the new phone, and, you know, everything's actually going pretty well. And there, I think they've even came out with their projections for the next quarter being even higher, you know, having a record quarter. So I think people just, you know, this company has been on such a roll that it's almost like, you know, the New York Yankees in baseball, or, you know, someone who's just so good and so powerful and so great that people just start to kind of tear them down a little bit and try to find anything they can criticize.
Yeah, and I guess now after the post-Steve Jobs era, which I guess is a little too early to dive into, right? I mean, it will probably be on the Steve Jobs defined era for the next 3-4 years, if not more.
So finally, let's talk a little bit about Android in the midst of everything going on with iPhone and Apple. Android's announced its newest version, which is calling Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah, seriously, why? I mean, what does that even mean?
It means it's a tasty treat. So what the new version of Android it is supposedly much sleeker than the previous versions. It eliminates the needs for buttons at all. There are widgets that you can have on your homepage that basically let you see news stories without even opening apps, or look at your emails without having to go into apps either, right from the home screen. It has multitasking. It also has this somewhat controversial feature where it will recognize your face in order to actually unlock the phone. So if your face isn't the one looking at it, then, you know, it won't even unlock.
I just feel like it's innovation for innovation's sake, but who knows, at some point that might be a big security concern. But do you see that as a huge there's a huge need for that kind of stuff?
I think that might be kind of a feature in search of a problem. But I mean, my experience looking at, you know, my girlfriend has an Android. I got her an Android phone, not the, you know, most up to date, best one, newest, etc. But you know, playing around with it, my impression with the phone at least is that the interface isn't quite as sleek as Apple. Of course, the Google apps like Gmail, like the calendar and things are really cool. I like the contacts, which are now going to be called people, where they have this, you know, where you look at one of your contacts and it has, you know, their Facebook, their Twitter, their phone, you know, it's like this very cool unified contact list that I think I like that. And I'd seen that on Google phones before.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what Apple did with their new iOS 5 as well.
Right, right.
In terms of notifications and stuff, the unification of all kinds of notification, which I think is what Google has done as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, I mean, it'll be interesting to really compare the new, Apple operating the iOS 5 versus Ice Cream Sandwich and see, you know, how the two compare with each other, you know, what's better on which. And also, they're both unified between the phone and the tablet. And that's a big deal because that means you're going to have a consistent experience if you're on, you know, one of these new Android tablets, or whether you're on an iPad and an iPhone, you're going to have, I'm guessing the apps are going to be very similar, and it's just going to be an easier experience between those two. And also, you know, Google now owning Motorola, you know, that's going to be interesting to see how the changes to Android play out on the Motorola phones.
I know the handsets, right?
Yeah, this is going to come to the Droid Razr and all possibly the Zoom tablet from Motorola. So, you know, will Google, you know, roll out things that, you know, work better on their hardware? You know, will they keep everything open? You know, now we've got the Amazon tablet that's going to run Android. Will it have a different version of Android? Will it have Ice Cream Sandwich? You know, these are all questions we don't know, but it just seems like this is kind of a war between, you know, the Android versus iPhone, iOS type of battle. You know, could be good for consumers if they really keep kind of upping the ante.
Yeah, and I think that for me, the interesting thing is to see what the unified experience of Google software plus Google handset, which is going to be Motorola handset, is going to come out as their attempt at that with Google Nexus and Google Nexus. What was the second version of it?
S, I think. Yeah,
hasn't been that successful. So it'll be interesting to see how that changes when they completely own the value chain from top to the bottom. And will they then be able to compete against Apple on just a sort of experience level?
And not to mention Google Plus. You know, Google having what, search, social network, hardware, software. I mean, that's a pretty. I mean, there's a lot of potential there. Whether they pull it off, you know, you never know. But that's a lot. There's a lot of potential when you own that many big chunks of the way people do mobile.
Yeah, it will be. And Google Plus for you, because I know you are a huge Google Plus fan.
For sure. Yeah, and we, you know, Google Plus, it's been interesting following that too, and just seeing how that's evolved. And
50 million, they said? 50 million in the last
year? Yeah, that's what they're saying. And it's fascinating using it, just because I'm trying to use all of them, but it's, you know, it's a little head spinning to try to do everything and try to keep up with every social network. But Google Plus, it still remains the place where I get the most interaction, and you know, and for whatever reason, that's just the place where, you know, people react to things and comment on things and share things more than on the other social networks, just for me personally.
Well, you haven't used Chime In, which launched what, 2 days ago?
Yeah, tell me about that. What that's been like for you.
Anyway, so they launched Chime.in, which is a bit of a cross between Twitter and Google Plus, in the sense that it looks like Twitter on the web, but it allows for a lot more characters than Twitter. So it's kind of like Google Plus in that way, and you can subscribe to people. And I just started using it last night. I just uploaded one photograph, and I got tons and tons of comments on it from people that I don't know. Yeah, and I guess next week we're going to be talking all about Amazon, right?
Yeah, next week we're going to be doing an entire week on Media Shift about ebooks and self-publishing, and we're going to dedicate the next Media Twits to Amazon and just, you know, everything that it's done in changing the book industry for the good and for the bad.
Yeah, it's my favorite company, as you know.
We'll see whether we can shake your fanboy faith in Amazon.
I am a huge fan. I live on Amazon. There's nothing I don't do on Amazon.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, along with co-host Rafat Ali. We want to thank our guests, Meyer Patel and Michelle McClellan, as well as our sponsor, the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, and PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to check out all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab. We'll catch you next week with our ebook special.